Moon Alice is the early show at Sullivan Hall in New York City, and Spiritual Res is the late show at Sullivan Hall. Thanks for listening to WUSB Stony Brook, and thank you all so much for your generous contributions during our most recent fundraiser, our Radiothon. And if you missed out, you can still sneak a pledge in there at wusb.fm/pledge. Have a great day.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6:03. Time for Off the Wall. Thank you. is this manual. I'm actually a passenger in my smart car right now, still in Canada. My smart car is being driven by Fred, who is a Canadian. And, well, first of all, welcome, Fred.
Thank you.
It's good to be in this unique situation here. By the way, you should be doing 50 kilometers an hour. Good, okay. We're in the little village of Sutton, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Sutton.
In Quebec?
Yeah, just 2 hours south of Montreal.
And very picturesque, very nice place. I guess a ski resort, amongst other things. But we're here, well, I just picked you up here, and we're heading to the States. But because of what happened to me last time in Sault Ste. Marie, where I was just so antagonized and pissed off by the way I was treated by the American authorities, being searched and questioned repeatedly just for daring to come back into my own country. This really is a bumpy road, by the way. Yeah, hope that's not coming through on the recording too much. But basically, because of that, and because of where we are, namely the southern part of Quebec near Vermont, I thought it would be fun to try and get back into the United States without dealing with those imbeciles, and just sort of, I'd heard these roads existed. I heard that there were roads that you could simply drive into the United States on the honor system and maybe sign your name somewhere or just, you know, not do anything bad. And, well, I want to see if that's really possible. And, well, Fred, you're game for that as well, right?
I'm willing to try it. I mean, we're not doing anything illegal. So it's going to be, a sort of mini-adventure to see how it'll work out. I've heard that there were roads into the United States you could drive to get into, like, to get gas, right? A lot of people would just cross over to the United States and there wouldn't be any boundaries. And you just go in over to get, like, cheap gas. And then they drive back, but, like, the roads wouldn't go anywhere into the United States, right? They'd just go to a service station or something, and that'd be that. It'd just be there to sell to Canadians who'd cross the border to get cheaper gas. But we're going to try to find one that goes straight into the United States.
What happens if you go in there and you buy gas and you don't come back? Do they watch you? Do they report you?
That's the thing. I heard that that specific road didn't go anywhere, right? You just could just go buy gas and it didn't lead anywhere that would connect.
So, well, that's not the one we're going to, is it?
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I hope not, too. I'd like to go to a road that continues, doesn't just loop back into Canada. Not that there's anything wrong with going back to Canada, but, I'd really like to just be able to kind of sneak back into my own country unannounced. Something kind of cool about that.
I don't even know if it's sneaking, is it?
Well, I think they'd prefer to talk to you. You know, they always seem to prefer to talk to me.
And so, why didn't they cover this street then? Why is it supposedly wide open?
Well, that's what I want to find out. I want to find out if this is even possible. I see those news reports occasionally on television that say, look, an unguarded border, you can just drive across, and the theater is half in one country and half in another, and it's a very small place. Nobody seems to really care. Of course, the disadvantage to that is that it's a very small place. Everybody knows everybody. So when we plow through there in our bright red smart car, we just might raise some eyebrows and maybe some rifles as well. We'll have to see just how we're greeted. But, you know, worse comes to worse. I mean, how much worse can it be than what I already went through? I'll get questioned. I'll get searched. Treated like a criminal. It's what I'm used to. So
you don't want to ask how much worse it could get because you might find out.
That's true. You're right. But the thing is, you know, I've told people about this. I've already Twittered that I'm going to be doing this, or tweeted. I'm sorry, I don't have the lexicon right. Yeah, well, you know, it's useful. For the most part, Twitter is a big waste of time, but it is useful when you're about to get into trouble to let a lot of people know what your status is. So right now, there are people worrying about me back in the States, I assume. Either that or they're ignoring me. And we'll, you know, we'll, of course, let them know several hours after we get back. No, I'll let them know right away.
Okay, we'll let him move by tweeting, right?
Because
tweeting. So, I mean, I have I use that Ping FM. Do you use that? I mean, you can actually like send something to Ping FM, and it'll send it to Twitter, it'll send it to Facebook, and like to a half dozen other services all at the same time. So you can send it to one place, and it gets like broadcasted all over these social networks. Do you do that?
No, I use Twitter that goes to Facebook. So I figured that was enough. I always thought Ping FM was a radio thing, but I guess that shows my ignorance. Here's the thing. I still think it's stupid. I still think it's exhibitionism. But I do want to understand it. I do want to play with it. I do want to, you know, see if there are ways of subverting it and using it in manners in which it was not intended. That's usually how I go through life. So, you know, this trip I've done a lot of things for the first time. I played with XM radio. I used Bluetooth, and I tweeted and did all kinds of other crazy social networking things. And now I might do something else for the first time, get across the U.S. border without being stopped at all, let alone interrogated. How far do you think we are?
There should be three stops. I mean, like a stop sign, right? Three stops before we get there. But I don't know, like, the length of the road. We're supposed to go down, like, a long and windy road going down, and so it's still got some time, some undetermined length of time.
Are we supposed to be going this fast? Seem to be really, maybe I'm just nervous, but it felt like we were going 100 miles an hour. But I guess we're not.
Close to 90 kilometers.
Okay, yeah, that's nowhere near that amount. But still, wouldn't do to get stopped for speeding before we even leave the country, and then interrogated once we enter the other country.
The limit is 90 right here.
90 kilometers an hour, which is about, 45, 50 miles an hour?
Something around 50.
It's been pretty cool the last 10 days because, first I drove the smart car up here, and that's completely metric. It's got kilometers instead of miles per hour. And then I rented a car in Montreal and drove that to the States, and of course that was the same thing. So, oh, look at that. You see that? What does Duanes mean? D-O-U-A-N-E-S. It's a picture of a customs agent.
Right. Duane means customs.
We don't want that.
That's right.
It's a big sign saying customs was ahead, so I don't know.
It's straight ahead 2 kilometers, but that's not where we're going now, is it?
Oh, so we're not going to stay on this road.
No, we're going to make a couple of turns.
See, this road is bumpy and kind of small, but I guess it's a smaller road. Interesting. Okay, so that big sign for customs we can ignore. And I see a sign for trucks to keep... because this is the road for trucks, I guess, to use. I just wonder if, like, there are drone planes or something watching us, and they see us turn off this road and go onto the little windy road. I think right away we'll be suspected of something. It's also quite possible we'll be chased. You know, somebody will say, hey, look at that, and they'll pursue us.
I wouldn't overestimate all this, like, high-tech surveillance. I mean, even if they have, like, cameras and they have, like, all the screens and they can, like, see you and spot you and get all this data on you, I mean, who knows if they're, like, still not checking their Facebook at the time you're passing by in front of the camera, right?
Yeah, I wonder if they read my Twitter. That's quite possible, too. But, no, I know they're concerned at this border because there are Mexicans in Canada. And sometimes they come to the States.
That's right. I know a couple of Mexicans.
Yeah, you see.
Is this the manor?
Is it the what?
The manor.
You're asking me like I know where I am. What does the manor even mean?
Well, remember the big manor we passed?
Oh, that McMansion.
Yeah.
I didn't see it unless it's like behind an invisibility shield.
I don't think we passed it yet.
We're coming up to the train tracks, but of course we do that every 20 feet in this town. All right. That looks like a house up ahead that could be customs. In fact, I think it is. But doesn't that look like some kind of border?
I don't know. It looks like something. It did say 2 kilometers.
Yeah, I hope we didn't outsmart ourselves and wind up going. I think we did, because I think that's the border, man. I think that's probably what happened.
Okay. So should we try to pass
well,
here?
If we just go through, I guess it's a little tiny one, I'll say that. But... oh, well, go around, I guess. That's definitely the U.S. border. And I think if we made a U-turn here, we'd be in really bad shape. Yeah, customs. So we blew it, man. We went down the wrong street. But let's go slowly and see what happens. It's a little tiny building, I'll say that. And there's a big stop sign. I don't see any people. Oh, I see a person. All right, I'm going to put this down so that we're not... not caught, but we will be caught.
Is that a success or a failure?
Well, I can't call it a success. The reason I can't call it a success is because we were supposed to go across an unguarded border, and we waltzed right into the arms of that guard.
The border,
and she searched the car. I mean, what was she doing back there? She opened up the back, and, you know, I don't even know if everything's still back there. She could have, like, taken away my laptop for all I know.
No.
Well, she was a lot nicer, but
nice.
We still didn't just get waved through. I mean, I've been to Canada twice in the last few days. First time it took me 10 seconds, second time it took me 30 seconds. No one ever asked me to pop a trunk or look at anything of mine other than my passport. So, no, this is not a success. We got, you know, of course, we're the only car that came through today probably in that particular area, and certainly we were unusual. Smart car, and I've been to China and Russia in my passport. But it wasn't what I was hoping for. I was hoping for that long, windy road.
I know. I mean, we missed the turn, and
You missed the turn. You were driving.
You were sitting with me. You have the map.
Yeah, well...
No, it's my fault.
This road isn't even on those maps, let alone the little windy one.
I know, and I have no idea where we are.
Well, we're in a place where the speed limit is 25 miles an hour, and you're doing 60 kilometers, and I know that's faster than 25.
Right. Well,
so unless you want your first American ticket, I'd slow down.
Yeah, I'm trying to make things interesting.
All right, we're in a little small Vermont town, at least. And we're in... Oh, I'm back in the United States? Wow, how about that? Okay, so I don't have to worry about borders anymore.
So you want us to go back through Canada and try again?
I think we should keep doing this till we get it right.
Yeah.
But not this time. All right, well, we survived so far, so let's now try to find our way back to New York. Well, to cut a long story short, we found our way back to New York, and yes, here I am. I'm live in studio now. That was Fred. We were driving across the border. We wanted to do it a different way, but it didn't quite work. We wanted to find that little windy road, but, you know, it's a lot harder to do than you might think, because the maps aren't that good, and you can't really ask people how to get across the border undetected. But you know what? I'm going to do it one of these days. I'm definitely going to do it. I learned a lot on this trip. If you're listening the last couple of weeks, you've probably heard some of my adventures, where basically all I did was go to Canada and then go down to Wisconsin and Ohio and then back to Canada again, because I had to get the smart car, which is a Canadian car, and had to get maintained, and had all kinds of had one run-in really with customs coming into the United States in Wisconsin, actually in Michigan, and basically went to Nauticon, the hacker convention in Cleveland, got to hang out in Cleveland. Boy, what fun that was. Oh my God, you would think the swine flu had hit then, because there were just no people on the street anywhere. It's really sad, and it's not atypical of those Midwestern cities where there just aren't people around. So, it was fun hanging out with people, though, intelligent people that show up for hacker conferences. That's fun. And spent some time in Dayton, which, you know, that's fun, too, if you hang out with the right people. And then, of course, Canada, which is a fascinating place. I managed to drive into the northern part of Ontario. Real no man's land, 2 feet of snow on the ground still. And just meditate a bit as I was driving, which is kind of dangerous, but... If you figure out how to do it right, it can be pretty therapeutic. Now, something I discovered, because I was visiting a friend in Poughkeepsie on the way up, I discovered that you don't have to take the New York State Thruway to get to Canada. I always assumed you had to, and you had to pay these tolls and nonsense like that. But there's this other road. Yeah, there's a secret road that many people might not know about, called the Taconic State Parkway. Oh, my God, what a road this is. It's the most scenic, old-school road I've ever seen. No trucks, and hardly any cars as well. Just a lot of scenery, and, you know, it's kind of dangerous, too, at times. On the way back, driving the smart car, if you recall, a week ago Monday, we had the most intense rainstorm I think ever recorded by Western civilization, and I was in the middle of it, driving down this nice scenic road, but sometimes it didn't have any shoulders. Sometimes you just had sheer rock next to you. And it was extremely narrow, no place to pull over, and you had to get it just right. So that's a bit of a challenge when you're driving a little tiny car and there's all kinds of monsoon conditions. And, of course, that's when traffic starts to appear when this happens, and you have to watch out for them as well. And you're tired on top of all that. But boy, what a nice road that is. I don't know if anyone's ever ridden on it. Basically, you just kind of, you can start from New York City. It's not called the Taconic State at first. I think it's called the Spring Parkway or something. But it turns into the Taconic Parkway, and like I said, no trucks, just hardly anybody on. I don't know why. There's no toll. I made it all the way up to Montreal and paid 40 cents total in tolls. It was incredible. And I was thinking, you know, driving down, before it started monsooning, driving down and not seeing a single car for maybe 2 or 3 hours going in my direction. I saw cars going the other way, but nobody passed me, and I didn't pass anybody. I was thinking, wouldn't this nice, well-paved road in the middle of nowhere be a really pleasant place to walk in the middle of the night? And, yeah, you might say, Emmanuel, that's insane. Walking on a highway in the middle of the night, are you out of your mind? And, well, okay, yeah, maybe a little, but think about it. You're walking down this road, and obviously you're on pavement. There's plenty of space for you to move around. The absence of traffic, you would know if a car was coming a full 5 minutes probably before it showed up. You'd see the lights in the distance. The only thing you'd have to worry about is some joker with night vision driving and not using lights. And even then, you could probably hear the noise coming. And just think about it. It must be so quiet and silent and dark and just majestic, yet you're on a highway on foot. And that's something I really like to do. If it's always that way, if it's always as sparsely populated as I saw it that night, then you can count on me doing, and I'll probably take my recorder with me too, and you can maybe hear the last show I ever do walking on the highway in the middle of the night in upstate New York. Actually, probably the biggest danger would be wildlife. I don't know if they have bears up there, but deer maybe, or moose, or I don't know what they have, but I'm sure something. A wolf, yeah, a wolf could attack you. All kinds of things like that could happen. So it's something, though. It's interesting. And you know what? I could have the night vision. I could walk around with night vision and see if anything was out there worth commenting on. But boy, it was something else. It was I've never taken a trip like that before, coming from Canada and going to Canada, not using the thruway. So I heartily recommend it if you want a different perspective and a lot of scenery. But be careful if it's raining, because it's really scary when you do that. Wow. Okay, sound effect of the day. Oh, yeah. You know what that is. That's the sound of the enemy. That's the sound of pigs. And apparently pigs are, they have it in for the human race now. Do you remember years ago, I remember we would name flu after people. It would be the Asian flu, the Hong Kong flu. What was it, the Persian flu? There were all kinds of different flus, Spanish flu, Puerto Rican flu, Mexican flu. Well, I guess we have that again. But now we name it after animals, bird flu, swine flu, dog flu. All right, there's no dog flu. But wouldn't that be great, puppy flu? Like, you know, having a puppy makes you susceptible to getting the flu, so everyone has to get rid of all their puppies. And, boy, what a heartbreak that would be, you know. And, oh, little Junior just got licked in the face by Spot there. Got to have them both destroyed now. It really kind of, like, turns your emotions over. But, wow, yeah, pandemic time. Oh, boy, here we go again. And I say that as somebody who's never really experienced a pandemic before. But apparently, we're due. We're due for a pandemic. We haven't seen one in 41 years, they say. And that was when the aforementioned Hong Kong flu crossed the globe. You know how many people got killed? 1 million. 1 million people worldwide got killed by that. Yeah. Now, if swine flu reaches pandemic levels, the question everyone's asking is, what happens next? Well, recurrent outbreaks of avian influenza and the outbreak of SARS, remember that, in 2003, rang alarm bells as potential pandemics, and both did jump the animal-to-human barrier, but neither disease mutated enough to enable sustained human-to-human infection. That's according to Dr. K.Y. Yuan, who is head of microbiology at, guess where, Hong Kong University. So he knows a thing or two about pandemics. Strictly speaking, avian influenza and SARS did not become pandemics because they were too good at killing their hosts. Yes, I'll say that again. They didn't become pandemics because they were too good at killing those people that were carrying them. Now think about that. If you get a disease and you die from it, it's harder for you to spread that disease to other people.
Yeah, it really is. Now, for a sustained pandemic, it needs to be able to maintain human-to-human contact without killing its host off. Now, avian influenza never became a man-to-man disease. Man-to-man disease. It's got a ring to it, doesn't it? Swine flu is already a man-to-man disease. I guess you can take the pigs out of the equation. Yep. Why do animals sound like that? What was nature thinking coming up with an animal that sounds... I mean, pigs are great. They're adorable. You ever hang out with a little pig? They're not messy. They're not slobs unless you throw them into a plot of mud. And you know what? If somebody dropped you in a plot of mud, I'll bet you'd be messy too. But pigs by nature aren't that messy. You can have them running around your house and they make dandy little pets. Except for that noise. I mean, it sounds like somebody's being strangled. So the pigs aren't really the issue anymore. I mean, they could be, I suppose, if you spend a lot of time with pigs, but this disease already is spreading from human to human. The World Health Organization cautions it cannot say whether or not this will indeed cause a pandemic, according to epidemiologists. Why can I say a word like that so easily? And I have trouble with such other words, you know, three-syllable words I fall down over. But epidemiologists, I can say that. No problem whatsoever. I've been able to say epidemiologist since I was 4. Really, really spooked my mother out when I said that. Anyway, according to the epidemiologists and health experts, here's what the world might see if there is another pandemic, based on past experience. The disease would skip from city to city over an 18 to 24-month period, infecting more than a third of the population. That's right, a third of the population. Look to your left, see that person? Look to your right, see that other person? One of you is going to be infected. World Health Organization officials believe as many as 1.5 billion, that's billion with a B, people around the globe would seek medical care, and nearly 30 million would seek hospitalization. Seeking does not necessarily mean finding, you realize that. And based on the last pandemic and current world population, as many as 7 million people could die. That's according to the epidemiologists. Hospitals will become overcrowded. Schools will close. Businesses will close. Airports will be empty. Baseball seasons will be canceled. Television program schedules will be curtailed. Road paving projects. Well, you get the idea. It's going to mess us up big time. Business will become very bad as people avoid as much social contact as possible. How can we figure out a way to make this spread to Facebook so we can avoid all that social contact? That would be nice. Health facilities, continuing with the predictions here, health facilities will become overrun with patients, and there would be less than adequate staffing as medical health professionals fall ill themselves, including epidemiologists. They'll fall ill as well. Yes. We saw cases in SARS where people who should have gone to the hospital for things like cancer treatment didn't go, and that resulted in higher deaths. The very young and very old will likely be the most susceptible to the illness. So those of us in the middle, I guess that's just the way it goes. Experts caution, much is still unknown about the current swine flu virus and its severity, and it's too early to say whether it will lead to a pandemic. But as the pigs laugh at us, right now the focus is on finding answers and containing the spread. All right, well, we'll be updating people as this thing develops one way or another. It's kind of creepy that we're talking about things like this. You know, we've all seen the movies, you know, 28 days later and all that. Maybe we'll be looking at cities that look like Cleveland, where nobody's in the streets. And Mexico City is like that right now. Nobody's going out. Everyone's afraid. Everyone's walking around with those little masks over their faces. Fat lot of good that's going to do you. Really doesn't do that much good, from what I've been told. But Mexico, they've been playing soccer games to empty stadiums so that people don't get together. Restaurants are only selling food to go. Don't stay here. We don't want you here. Go home. The only thing that people are doing en masse in their infinite stupidity is going to church, where no doubt they're infecting each other hand over fist, whatever that means. But it's just it kind of makes sense that if we are doomed, it's going to be through organized religion. All right. I'd like to take phone calls tonight. We've been having severe problems with the equipment. I don't want to get into it. There's a long delay before getting a second CD player working here. The broken headphones aren't even here now, so I had to steal some, and I'm not proud of where I got them from. And I'm not even sure delay is working, to be honest, because I was able to figure out a way to patch it in, but now the VU meters for the other channel don't work at all. It's like, you know, if somebody came in here with a sledgehammer, I think this studio would be in better shape. I really do. And, you know, I don't like to hear myself bitch, and I'm sure you don't either, but it's just, I'm trying to explain why it might be difficult to take phone calls. I'd like to take phone calls, and if we see a lot of people calling in, 631-632-9872, then we'll take our chances and see what happens. We will. But, you know, it's literally anything that could possibly go wrong in this place. The microphone stops working sometimes. I mean, you know, I don't want to jinx it, but the lights work right now. I can see what I'm doing. But, you know, walking into this place, the door didn't work. The door did not work. I was pulling on it, and it was stuck because of the heat. And you know what happens here at Stony Brook? When it gets hot, they turn on the heat. Basically, they get a little confused, and they say, it's hot outside, therefore we turn on heat. No. Okay, then we turn off the power. No. Eventually, they get to the air conditioning around September. Oh, we love this place. We really do. But if you pledged during the fundraiser that we had last month, or this month, actually, please, please send in that pledge. Consider doubling the pledge, because nobody needs it more than us. And if the pandemic is coming, you know, it doesn't make any difference anyway, does it? And if you miss the fundraiser, don't cry. You can still pledge. WUSB.FM has a form online where you can pledge. Help keep this place going. Help pick us up onto our feet so that we can bring you quality broadcasting 24 hours a day. All right, I see that one call on the line. Thank you very much, one caller. But, you know, one call, I could get injured doing all the things I have to do to get this to work. So if I see three or four calls, I'll consider that. And we're not asking for anything. We're not asking for money. We're just asking for people to call in and talk about pandemics maybe or other things in the news today. There are all kinds of other things. Anybody see the White House flyover yesterday? Oh, boy, that was fun. This is the story. This is what happened. Basically, some nut in an office I never heard of before called the White House Military Office. Did you know there was a White House Military? Either that or just a liaison office with the military. I'm not exactly sure what they do there. But apparently they can simply schedule these things without telling anybody. Let alone the president. Apparently he didn't know about it either, which is insane. They can just tell the Air Force to go and fly jetliners low over New York City and make sure that nobody knows in the local government as well. Now, here's the thing. The local government was told. New York City was told about this. Somebody in the mayor's office, somebody in Mayor Bloomberg's office was told this was going to happen, and that person apparently, if we're to believe Mayor Bloomberg, didn't tell the mayor. Didn't tell anybody else. A junior aide to the mayor was told by federal authorities, keep this quiet. Don't tell anybody. And literally, that person didn't tell anybody. That's a story that's being spread around now. I'm not sure how believable it all is. It sounds pretty incredible to me. But basically, for those of you who missed it, an Air Force One lookalike, the backup plane for taking the president around, flew low over parts of New York and New Jersey yesterday morning. And that plane was accompanied by two F-16 fighters. Now, those of you with short memories, we had this incident back in 2001 that didn't turn out so nicely. And so people seeing this naturally remembered what was going on and thought, oh my God, it's happening all over again, especially people who are inside buildings. So there are all kinds of evacuations and panic in the street and basically anger and well-deserved anger as well. Obama is pretty pissed off about this, too. When he learned of the episode Monday afternoon, he was furious. Rumor has it he even used some swear words. But it's unbelievable that that something like this would be planned. And I guess, you know, they thought, well, you know, we can't tell too many people about this because, well, I don't know what somebody's going to do. What could somebody do? I don't really know. But obviously the synapses weren't firing, and whoever was thinking of doing this and not telling anybody didn't quite process the thought as to what would happen if you didn't tell anybody and nobody knew about this. It's incredible. It's living proof anybody can get a job in government because, look, you don't have to think. This is what happens when you don't think. Now, the police department confirmed that it had been notified about the event, but said it had been barred from alerting the public. Yeah. And you know what? They didn't even alert the cops, because the cops didn't know about this either. And the cops, they're people too. You know, they're people out there in the street. They had no idea what was going on. All right. So that was the little bit of fun that we had yesterday in New York City. They say it might have even affected the stock market. My goodness. Incredible. All right. Again, phone number 631-632-9872. If anyone wants to call up, I still see that one phone call, unless that's a different one. But, again, we got to get a bunch if we're going to actually launch into delay land. And that's really going to be that's going to be fun. Okay, the other bit of news, and this is a rather important bit of news. Do you know that Phil Spector has switched parties? Oh, wait a minute. Wrong story. Not Phil Spector. Arlen Spector. Yeah, Phil Spector, he's what? Is he going to jail or something? He got convicted of murder? We don't care what party he's in, right? He's in the Manson party or something. Basically, Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Spector was a Republican up until today, and now he's decided he's going to become a Democrat. You can do that. You can be a senator and suddenly decide that you want to play for a different team. And that's interesting. I guess it kind of annoys people that elected you because you're a Republican, but if people still back you and feel that you're drifting away from the party or the party is drifting away from you, it can be a good thing. It can be something that they welcome. And apparently his constituents are welcoming this, because I was watching some reaction and they were applauding and apparently quite happy. The most important thing about this, though, is that it gives the Democrats a potential 60th vote in the Senate. And that's a crucial number, because assuming Al Franken wins in Minnesota, I can't believe I'm saying this, because I still think Al Franken is some guy from Saturday Night Live. But, yeah, he's potentially a senator now. And he was fighting that guy, Coleman, over in Minnesota. And it was down to, like, you know, four votes or something, separating the two of them. But apparently he has the support of courts and legality and things like that. So once all the appeals are through, it's quite likely that Franken will be seated in the Senate. So having Spector become number 60 means that the Democrats no longer have to worry about the filibusters, you know, the Republicans that just won't shut up and will keep their legislation going through. And since the Republicans are so monolithic in number that they don't normally have people who break away, this is a rare exception. In fact, Spector was one of the three people that was supporting Obama in his various financial incentives that he was pushing earlier this year. He was one of the three. Now, as you can see, he became so alienated that he left the party altogether. And so now, if there are in fact 60 votes for the Democrats in the Senate and a clear majority in the House and a Democratic president, it's going to be very, very hard to stop what Obama wants to do. And, you know, listening to talk radio over the last couple of weeks while I was driving around, I got the XM service, so I was able to listen to Fox Radio, which I guess you can get on local stations as well. But I was able to listen to them in clear sound, uninterrupted. I was also able to get all kinds of other right-wing talk networks. And they are in a state I have never seen them in, not during the Clinton years, not even during the Carter years. These people are going crazy, because they're losing so badly. And they're going so crazy that they're basically trying to blame Obama for everything and trying to make it seem as if this guy is opening the door for terrorism, trying to scare people by smiling at Hugo Chavez at the summit. He's basically making America weak. by giving an overture to Cuba. He's basically embracing communism. And this is a guy that hasn't even proven he's a citizen. This is a guy that's a Muslim. This is a guy that was illegally elected and is dragging this country down and intends to make us bankrupt and is laughing at the working class. These are the kinds of things that they're saying over and over and over again. And they say it enough times, they get people really, really angry. And just listening to some of the people calling in, it scared me. It scared me the way these people are. I mean, I was involved quite heavily with anti-Bush people over the last 8 years. And I saw a few lunatics there, too. But nobody scared me as much as these people scare me. Because they have this kind of matter-of-fact way about them. Like, you know, they're going to get it done one way or another. They're going to get this guy out of there. Wow. So, I got to wonder now, what's going to happen now that Obama seems to have gotten a clear advantage here and the Republicans yet another setback? How angry are they going to get? And what are they going to do about it? Now, this whole releasing of the memos concerning torture, oh my God, that's they should be stringing him up for that. Not the people who ordered the torture, Obama, for daring to make this country weak by telling the terrorists what we will not do. By telling the terrorists that we don't support torture anymore. Yeah, basically he might as well just open up the floodgates. The floodgates of terrorism, that is. And in a way, you know, I can understand why he was so quick. I didn't agree with this at all. But I understand why he was so quick to make it clear that he didn't intend to prosecute those people who believe they were just following orders. I mean, I've heard that before. Just following orders. It's no excuse. But had he done that, had he said, yes, I intend to prosecute these people, put them in prison, and go after as many people as possible, I think there would be violence at this point. I really do. These people are not exactly rational. You should listen to Right Wing Radio and just hear how the points are connected. And it's not exactly through logic that they're connected. So I think had that happened, enough people in that camp would have been convinced that the country had been taken over by a foreigner. Yeah, and that we were in mortal danger, and they would have run out into the streets with their semi-automatic weapons, and God knows what they would have done. I mean, I'm simplifying it a bit, I realize that, but there are a lot of people out there who are very, very angry and very, very well armed, and it makes me worried. Because what they're angry about is simply doing things a different way, and not even that great a different way. I mean, if we did things my way, well, it would be so different you wouldn't, well, forget it. It would never work because people would react so strongly against it. And that's something I try to tell people that say Obama doesn't go far enough. Obviously, he can't go too far. If he goes too far, he'll be out of there 4 years max, maybe sooner. The point is to convince people. A lot of people in this country are not convinced that he's doing the right thing. He needs to convince them. He needs to convince them by trying to reach out to them, at least, not alienating them. It might feel good to alienate people that you consider to be your enemy, but I don't consider people on the other side to be the enemy. I consider them to be misinformed. People who need to see that something else might make sense. And so that's hopefully where we're going. But, boy, it's scary. It's scary hearing the reactions that are out there. And interesting, though. Interesting to see just where this is all going. So I really hope, basically, Holder has come out and said that prosecutions of Bush officials are not off the table. That in fact, that could happen. So I'm happy to see that there is a possibility. And obviously, Obama himself can't come out and say that. But some of his people certainly can. And I certainly hope he doesn't stand in the way of that, because that would be a big mistake. These people do need to be called to account for what they have done. And I am happy just to be having the conversation. I figured after 8 years of Bush were over, it would just all be swept under the rug and we never would even mention it again. You know, it's like what Nancy Pelosi did. where she said that any talk of impeachment of Bush is off the table. We're not going to talk about that. Why not? You know, I thought we should talk about that because what he was doing was far worse than anything Clinton did, and we impeached him, didn't we? So why in God's name was that off the table? And it's kind of ironic now that Pelosi is one of the people pushing for prosecutions. Maybe she's learned her lesson. So I think we're in a good place now. We're in a good place because we're discussing this. It's out there. And the possibility exists that somebody might actually pay for all the harm they've caused. Not only to the people that were tortured, but to the country in general. Insofar as our reputation, our values. The fact that there are people walking around now who actually believe the Jack Bauer way of doing things is the right way. That would be unheard of 20, 30 years ago. Now, also coming up, and this is going to be a whole lot of fun, too, the Defense Department, you know, whoever has been on the phone all this time, I'm sorry, we're not going to, unless somebody just keeps calling and somebody else replaces them and there's only room for one call coming through at a time, there's no way we're going to have time. Sorry. Might as well hang up. Yeah, they're gone. Okay. I'm sorry. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Love to hear from you. Okay. The Defense Department will release a substantial number of photographs showing abuse of prisoners at prisons in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's according to the ACLU. The release will be in response to an open records lawsuit filed by the ACLU. The statement released last week said the photos were taken at facilities other than Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. These photographs provide visual proof that prisoner abuse by U.S. personnel was not aberrational but widespread, reaching far beyond the walls of Abu Ghraib. Abu Ghraib? That place, that awful place. The photos are supposed to be released by May 28th, so there's going to be all kinds of controversy going around. How dare he release these photos? Of course, Obama will be blamed, but how dare he? It's just more proof that he's anti-U.S. and has to be stopped at all costs. I love it. In a copy of the letter posted on the ACLU's website, Acting U.S. Attorney Lev Dassin said that 21 photographs would be released. Only 21. Now, the government also is processing for release a substantial number of other images. Okay, a substantial number. This lawsuit was filed in 2004. This is how long it takes for these things to happen. As you can see, it has nothing to do with Obama. This is going to get released regardless. But no doubt, he'll take the blame for it. Oh, yes. So accountability, that's a good thing to have. And let's hope we have more of it in the times ahead. Okay. What else is going on? We don't have time to really get into some serious stories. So let's talk about a couple of not-so-serious stories. There was a report of wild dogs traveling on a subway line. I'm not kidding. This really was reported in the Sun over in England. Stray dogs are commuting to and from a city center on underground trains in search of food scraps. The clever canines board the tube each morning. After a hard day scavenging and begging on the streets, they hop back on the train and return to the suburbs where they spend the night. Experts studying the dogs say they even work together to make sure they get off at the right stop after learning to judge the length of time they need to spend on the train. If they could teach that to humans, that would be great. The mutts chose the quietest carriages at the front and back of the train. They've also developed tactics to hustle humans into giving them more food on the streets of Moscow. I assume this is where this is all taking place, is in Moscow. Well-trained dogs... I mean a photo caption. Scientists believe the phenomenon began after the Soviet Union collapsed in the 1990s, and dogs were free to pursue their own fortunes. Russia's new capitalist moved industrial complexes from the city center to the suburbs. Dr. Andrei Poikov of the Moscow Ecology and Evolution Institute said these complexes were used by homeless dogs as shelters, so the dogs had to move together with their houses. Because the best scavenging for food is in the city center, the dogs had to learn how to travel on the subway to get to the center in the morning, then back home in the evening, just like people. I don't believe this. I'm having a lot of trouble with this. Supposedly the dogs like to play during their daily commute. They jump on the train seconds before the door is shut, risking their tails getting jammed. They do it for fun, and sometimes they fall asleep and get off at the wrong stop. The dogs have learned to use traffic lights to cross the road safely, and they use cunning tactics to obtain tasty morsels of various bits of food. They sneak up behind people and bark loudly to shock them into dropping their food. And with children, the dogs play cute by putting their heads on youngsters' knees and staring pleadingly into their eyes to win sympathy and scraps. Dogs are surprisingly good psychologists. Well, I agree with that, but I don't know about the whole getting off the right stop on the subway thing. That's a little hard to believe. And get this, the Moscow mutts are not the first animals to use public transport. In 2006, a Jack Russell in Dunnington, North Yorks, began taking the bus to his local pub in search of sausages. You see, this is where I start having trouble with the story. And it ends like this. 2 years ago, passengers in Wolverhampton were stunned when a cat named McCavity started catching the 331 bus to a fish and chip shop. Yeah, you know, you could have had me with the subway story, but you got greedy, and I don't buy it anymore. Sorry. All right, we're out of time. Sorry for the technical issues, but we'll try to get them fixed. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Next week, hopefully, we'll read a lot of listener mail and talk about other things. In the meantime, here's a pig-related song to usher in the swine flu era. Have a good night.
Kids, Finn with you at 7 p.m., Finn's Revolution, WUSB Stony Brook.